KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Today on KUCB News, Alaska's governor introduced a bill Friday that aims to reverse the state's ban on fin fishing. And Alaska Board of Fisheries approved smaller red king crab harvest in southeast Alaska. All of that and more coming up.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by GCI. Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Unalaska. GCI now offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and same pricing as Anchorage. More information at gci.com/internet.
You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM Unalaska. It's Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi with some local news. Governor Mike Dunleavy introduced a bill Friday that aims to reverse Alaska's ban on fin fishing farming. Alaska currently only allows aquaculture for shellfish and kelp. Dunleavy says the bill would allow farmers to breed and develop fin fish stocks, although salmon farming would remain prohibited. But some lawmakers are pushing back. State Representative Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican and chair of the House Fisheries Committee, told legislators during a Monday floor session that the bill could put Alaska's wild fisheries at risk while the industry is struggling.
Lifting a ban on fin fish farming, regardless of which species, regardless of saltwater or freshwater, would be sending the wrong signal to the industry, fishing communities, and fishing families across the state that are struggling currently to recover.
The bill faces significant hurdles in the state legislature. Stutes, along with the House Fisheries Committee Vice Chair Bryce Edgman, released a statement Monday morning opposing the bill. Fish farming was outlawed in Alaska in 1990 following widespread opposition from lawmakers and the public. And though the bill excludes salmon farming, Stutes warned it could set the stage.
Pursuing freshwater fin fish farming of any kind is a foot in the door for salmon farming in Alaska.
The global aquaculture industry is worth more than $6 billion. China leads the sector, producing about a third of global output, according to a 2024 study from the United Nations. The U.S. produces about 2%. Dunleavy's proposed bill would limit fish farming methods to, quote, inland closed system bodies of water. Alicia Bishop is the regional aquaculture coordinator for NOAA. She says that means stocked ponds and fish tanks.
We're not talking about open water cages or any other cultivation method like that. So this would be, you know, on land, closed ponds, or recirculating aquaculture systems.
The bill also requires any farmed fish be sterilized, so they couldn't reproduce if they did escape the tanks. Still, its path and any current support in the legislature remains unclear. Red King crab commercial permit holders in southeast Alaska will have a better chance of fishing in the coming seasons. That's after the Alaska Board of Fisheries approved a change in management regulations that was proposed by the State Department. It allows for a smaller conservative commercial fishery when crab stocks aren't enough to open the typical competitive fishery. KFSK's Olivia Rose reports from Petersburg.
Red King crab is a low-volume, high-value fishery. The crabs can bring in over $100 each. But commercial openings have been few and far between, just one in over a decade. Andy Kiddem's crabs out of Petersburg. He and a number of fellow commercial crabbers testified to the Alaska Board of Fisheries at their meeting in Ketchikan in January.
Had we fished that 117,000 pounds in 2024, it would have been worth over $2 million to the state of Alaska's fishermen. The economic trickle-down to our processors and coastal communities would have doubled that. So let's move this arbitrary threshold. Simple enough. Change regulation, harvest the surplus king crab when available.
That quote-unquote arbitrary threshold refers to a regional 200,000-pound minimum that was set decades ago when the crab were less valuable and the industry only made money on higher volumes. There needs to be that much crab in order for a competitive commercial fishery to happen. But the state's Red King crab stock estimates for the region have repeatedly fallen short of that minimum threshold. And without a commercial opening, crabs that could have been caught stay in the water and out of commercial pots. That's partly why, for years, permit holders and the department have been trying to form a new way to harvest the resource.
Fishermen, processors, and EDF&G developed this proposal to allow a controlled crab fishery, which will keep the harvest at the prescribed level. It will give fishermen an opportunity to go to work, give local processors an opportunity to keep their workers employed. Everyone wins, and that's why Proposal 243 has widespread industry support.
The proposal, which was submitted by Alaska's Department of Fish and Game, garnered unanimous support from the Board of Fish. Member Curtis Chamberlain of Anchorage commended the department and said he was moved by the innovation of fishermen when facing a marginalized resource.
I found a lot of that discussion, quite frankly, inspiring, because if there's one thing we're finding is a lot of these markets are becoming marginalized and we have to find ways to operate within this new dynamic. And the Red King crab fishery has, and the fishermen have shown, if nothing, adaptable.
The proposal's approval means that when Red King crab estimates fall short of 200,000 pounds, a smaller, conservative commercial fishery can open for a given season. In that scenario, a so-called individual catch limit, or ICL, gets assigned to permit holders based on how much crab can be fished. Department officials say it's a management tool, and there's still a chance the fishery closes before a permit holder has taken their full ICL. They also say this biologically-based harvest strategy doesn't give the fishermen a guaranteed or set amount of Red King crab harvest every year. Adam Messmer is the State Department's lead shellfish biologist for the region.
Looking back over the history, if this was implemented, it would have opened the fishery, I believe, twice in the last 20 years. It's not going to make it a free-for-all. This isn't going to be something that happens every single year. It would add a very minute amount of opportunity.
But even so, a number of commercial fishermen who testified said it's a step in the right direction. The board's approval of the proposal followed their unanimous rejection of a different Red King crab proposal from a Juneau-based group. That proposal aimed to eliminate commercial fishing for Red King crab in the Juneau area, where the state estimates that a quarter of the region's Red King crab reside. Instead, the proposal asked that the personal use fishery have 100% of the harvest. Board member Tom Carpenter of Cordova asked Messmer how removing that area's portion of the region's crab from the 200,000-pound minimum would impact the commercial fishery.
If this were to pass, will you be able to execute the Red King crab fishery at all in the future on the commercial side of things?
The way the regulations are now with the thresholds, no, Member Carpenter.
The total allocation the Juneau proposal asked for raised red flags for board members. Member Chamberlain said it went too far.
If the Alaska fishery was a body, this proposal would be cutting off the right arm to support the left. I think the long-term implications and damage to the overall body of the Alaska fishery cannot justify benefiting the personal use, as much as I love Alaskans to have crab meat in their freezer or in their pots. I can't go that far.
The Board of Fish unanimously opposed the idea, and the Juneau Group's proposal failed. Southeast commercial Red King crab season, if it opens, typically happens in November. The last time it opened in 2017, fishermen caught about 120,000 pounds, worth around $1.3 million at the docks. Reporting from Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
Most medical professionals receive minimal education on trauma-informed care during their schooling. A training program based out of the University of Alaska is trying to fill in that gap. Dr. Angelia Trujillo is in Unalaska today to tell the community about the Alaska Comprehensive Forensic Training Academy. The program aims to teach medical professionals how to recognize signs of abuse and human trafficking so providers can better serve patients who have been victims of violence. I sat down with Trujillo to learn more about why this training is particularly important for rural communities like Unalaska. Here's part of our conversation. So can you talk about why this course is important to Unalaskans?
So we find that, especially in our rural communities, that violence is significant. We don't just see sexual assault or domestic violence. We see all different kinds of violence. And so when we have healthcare professionals who are able to recognize and respond, that means everybody gets equitable care. What we find, especially in many of our rural communities, is that it's very difficult to maintain a specialty sexual assault response team. And so when the opposite option of that is to have healthcare professionals who know how to respond to everyone, so that if there is that situation where like a SART exam or something else more acute is needed, that there are people who would know how to do it because they're providing kind of similar services across the lifespan for other individuals who've been victimized.
Can you talk about the benefits of someone taking this training course, and then how that benefits their patients?
Well, so that's really kind of the biggest piece of this, is that when we go to nursing school or medical school, there's very limited time that is spent on trauma-informed care. Like, you might get a lecture, you might have a little bit longer session with it, but it's certainly not focused on skill building. Right, as nurses, we go to, you know, med-surg, and we work in our hospitals, and we do all kinds of skill-based stuff, but it's not part of the foundational curriculum to kind of incorporate all of those pieces together. And so what we're doing is we're really giving healthcare persons that opportunity to pull in trauma-informed care services for patients, kind of more extensive, usable documentation that may not have been part of their initial training. And so what that then in turn does for those healthcare persons is that now when they're meeting with a patient, their radar is a little more fine-tuned. They might be recognizing what a patient is saying when they're not quite ready to report. And so being more comfortable and confident in asking about victimization, right, using those trauma-informed skills to help people, you know, talk about what's happened to them. What we found, the research tells us that, like, a domestic violence victim might actually talk to a doctor or a healthcare person up to 11 times before they are comfortable, that patient is comfortable talking to that healthcare provider about what has happened to them. When we have providers who are comfortable recognizing and talking about that, it's easier for us as a healthcare provider to then talk to these patients and get them to talk to us sooner. So what I like to say is now we are reaching out to our patients and saying, hey, I'm a safe person to talk to. Is there anything you'd like me to know? I'm concerned about you because of this particular kind of injury. And it's easier for patients to say, yes, I do want to talk to you and tell you what's happened. Because when we can have patients who are talking to us about what's happened to them, we can get them to services. We can get them documented about what's going on instead of waiting for visit number 11 for them to get the care that they need, even though they might still not be ready to go to law enforcement at visit number 2 or 3 or even 7. We're still giving them the feedback and the information and the things to help them hopefully make those decisions earlier rather than later, so we can intervene faster. Healthcare persons who have this extra piece of training feel more confident in talking to patients about really difficult conversations, because those are difficult. And I'll be honest, you know, healthcare providers are part of everyday population too. And healthcare has that we have our own histories and our own backgrounds. It can be hard for us to talk about things. We have to learn how and have to have the opportunity to practice to do that. And so this training makes that happen for these providers. And so it just makes it easier for healthcare people to make that part of their everyday evaluation with their patients, instead of being something, oh, got to find that specialist to take this over for me. But then I, as that person who's living in my community, can say, hey, I am making a difference in my community.
So it sounds like you guys are going to have a forum Tuesday. So on Tuesday, you're going to have a forum to the public. Can you talk about what people can expect at this public forum?
So what we like to do is we have been traveling around the state of Alaska. We've been to about 23 different locations over this last year, and I'm so happy to have an opportunity to come out here to Unalaska. And we like to come together with kind of a general overview, community members. We want to talk to anybody who is interested in this topic or this issue in their community. We want them to come in and help give us feedback and information. And then we also talk to healthcare professionals while we're here. So we kind of do both because we want to promote the awareness of the training for the healthcare providers, but we also want the community to be aware that this kind of training is available because then they can also in turn say, hey, have you done that training? We want this additional, we want you to have this additional information and training to help serve us as your patients better. So we're trying to come at it from kind of a top down and a bottom up kind of focus to increase awareness because we really feel I feel very strongly about this opportunity of training to really help healthcare providers meet an unmet need in our communities.
All right. Is there anything else you'd want listeners to know that I didn't ask or
share? So you can find information about the academy. You can Google UAA, ACTFA, Alaska Comprehensive Forensic Training Academy should come straight up. I believe it's www.uaa.alaska.edu/ACFTA. That should get you directly to our website. It's got information on the various trainings, how you can sign up, more detailed information. And there's also a very short 5-minute video that talks about the who, the what, the why of what we're doing for this training.
That was Dr. Angelia Trujillo talking about the Alaska Comprehensive Forensic Training Academy, a forensic training for healthcare providers. A public forum will be held this afternoon at the Unalaska Public Library starting at 4. Interested community members are invited to attend. For the full island interview, head to our website at kucb.org. Let's take a look at KUCB's community calendar for the week. Unalaska City Council will have a regular meeting tonight starting at 6 o'clock inside City Hall. On the agenda, work sessions covering updates from Alulik Family Health Services, a PCR master plan presentation, and budget discussions. They'll also talk about renewable energy development and budget amendments for various city departments and projects. The public is invited to attend in person or online. For more information, head to our community calendar at kucb.org. Alulik Family Health Services is having their monthly board meeting tomorrow evening starting at 5:30. They'll meet in the upstairs conference room of the clinic. Members of the community are encouraged to attend. The Museum of the Aleutians will have their pub trivia at the Norwegian Rat Saloon this Thursday night at 6:30. Teams can be made up of 1 to 6 members, and there will be 5 rounds of trivia plus a 50-50 raffle. And last but not least, the Unalaska Teen Council is hosting a Midnight Madness event at the PCR Friday night. Kids who are in 6th grade through 12th grade are invited to participate as Teen Council takes over the entire community center and turns it into Alaska's coolest teen council or teen center for the night. A signed participation form from a parent guardian will be required. For more information on this week's community events, head to our community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a housekeeper and a bartender. The Adaga Tribe of King Cove is looking for a tribal administrator, a part-time or full-time IGAP assistant, and a solid waste recycling technician. The Belkoski Tribe of King Cove is looking for a part-time IGAP assistant, a full-time Belkoski Environmental Program assistant, and a part-time pull tab sales clerk. Community announcements. There will be a workshop of the Aleutians East Borough School District today at 6 p.m. at the Borough Building, followed by a regular meeting tomorrow at the Borough Building at 6:30. You can tune into that meeting live here on KSDP. And today is February 24th, 2025. Happy birthday to Larry Bear Jr. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Funding for KSDP is made possible in part by the King Cove Corporation, operating the Fleets, In Hotel, the Heart Lakes Apartments, and the Last Hook Off Tavern. The King Cove Corporation is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
the King Cove in my hand. Got my red worm in a Maxwell House coffee can. I'm gonna sit under a shade tree on a riverbank where it's cool. I'm gonna close my eyes and dream and let the cold pop away my blues. Saturday night we'd have a dance or two. We might wallow in the hay. Well, the only thing that ever went my way was this bad dude called away. But his last years was his best years, and this is what he had to say. He said, boy, I've worked this dirt all my life, but things ain't been good for a while. Why don't you move to the city, make a little money? You might be the first one in the family to ever die with a smile. I took his advice, they ain't going well, but my friends are far and few. Whoever said a city boy can have him country blues? Whoever said a city boy can have him country blues? Whoever said a city boy can have him country blues? Well, honey, they ain't tall to me and you.
Thank you. must begin here and now. New continent of earth and fire, tear down the wall. Come on now, getting higher and higher. Tear down the wall. Tear down the wall. Tear down the wall. Don't you cry.
for all the girls here.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio. I'm pulling you close. You just say no. You say you don't like it. But girl, I know you're alive. Cause when we kiss,
You are listening to KSDP Radio, 8:30 a.m. Sandpoint, 88.1 FM on repeater K201DA, King Cove, Alaska.
She's my mom. sunshine, Siam cat. Always sitting by your side, always.